The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric. I'm Gary. Welcome. Hi.
Hello. So I was just reading in the Washington Examiner. They posted it yesterday. Apparently, the former Vice President Joe Biden in Florida filming, and they believe it's a TV ad. He hasn't announced anything. They haven't put out a press release. But he also was spotted in Scranton, PA, back on April 4th, filming. So he's building the ads.
I wonder what his... You know, you and I have talked about optics before and how important optics are of a candidate. We see, for example, we had mentioned, you know, Buttigieg before. The Democrats love his optics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, he comes off as intelligent and thoughtful.
Right,
and,
right, yeah.
And it's like, okay, fine. You know, we see, you and I see through optics pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy to get through the substance, as we just did, or the lack of substance, as we did with Buttigieg, when he's tried to, you know, portray the fact that we need more democratic capitalism, which is a bunch of, as Dad would say, poop for the peasants.
Mm-hmm.
Because what he is trying to sell is socialism, economic and political socialism. That your property rights, that we have more of democratic capitalism when your property rights aren't as great as they used to be.
Right.
And sorry, you can't sell that. But with Biden, his optics in the past have been good. I wish it wasn't so, and I wish I didn't have to say it after the vice presidential debate of Paul Ryan back in 2012, when Paul Ryan went up against Joe Biden. Joe Biden swept the floor with him.
Yeah.
Ryan was horrible. And Biden was really good. Now, I wish I didn't have to, I wish I never had to say that, but I'm not going to deny the truth of the optics and how he was able to dismiss anything that Paul Ryan said in that vice presidential debate back in 2012. He was really good. I just wonder now, as he, you know, gets closer to 80 years of age,
mm-hmm.
whether that same excitement level and energy level is still there with him.
And if it still resonates, even if it is, does it still resonate? Yeah. Does it matter? I think it is interesting that one person reported that he was wearing a blue cap that said, "Make America's hair smell great again." Now, we're not sure if that is an accurate witness report. I'm not sure. We're trying to follow up on that. But I don't know that even if the energy is the same, even if the tactics are the same, and the tactics are, come on, man. You know, he likes use the word Jack. You know, come on, Jack. And be dismissive. You know, sound like the everyday regular guy. I don't know if that's enough. In 2020. It could be. It could be that the possibility of him beating Trump is enough. We already know that's a built into a certain number of voters, and that element is already in play, built in, not going to change. That if he becomes the nominee, then Biden is their choice because not Trump. But that's not how you win elections. You win elections in the middle. So there's the question. Does he resonate with the people in the center?
Just a side note for a moment. I'm sure everybody has seen, it wasn't a meme, but saw the Photoshop. I believe it was a Photoshop picture of Joe Biden putting the green jacket on Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I'm guessing that was Photoshop.
I'm guessing that was probably Photoshop.
Yes, we're working to confirm whether it was or not. Sources say it was.
Sources say it was Photoshop. You're right. Does he at all relate? Well, I guess that's the other point. He really hasn't been in the public eye.
No.
You know, Bernie has been in the public eye all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And still, you know, the thing that Sanders has is the left truly believes, and I think a plurality, there's a plurality of Democrats believe in socialism.
Right.
Of Democrats that exist.
Yeah.
So they may be looking at some of the other candidates out there, but if Bernie is their guy, they're going to go with him. And Bernie does have a certain amount of socialist street cred. He's right. been out there promoting it a lot. Now, he did take some hits. You know, some of there were a couple of publications, I got the story down here somewhere, that were hitting him on the whole millionaire status now. It's not really fashionable to be a socialist and own three homes. We were right when we started talking about that a way back. Excuse me, you got a big car and three homes? And how come you only have two homes and haven't donated the rest of it to anybody else? And he has, in some liberal circles, been taking a hit from Fox News, questioning him. I'm saying, well, why did you take Trump's tax cuts?
Right.
You didn't have to do it. You can get, if you believe you have a responsibility and obligation, you can do it on your own. And he dismissed it and said, I pay what I owe. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really now? So it's not an obligation anymore. It's only, I'm only going to abide by the rules that everybody else that I supposedly disagree with abide by. Okay.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Now, here's the question, too.
Man, I love this.
Bernie's appeal. What have we seen in recent years? As you mentioned, Bernie's energy is constant. His presence is constant, right? I would say, in fact, nothing really has changed since the 2016 run. And likely won't change. But what is changing is America moving left, even further left, even Republicans moving further left. So as you're looking at the meter.
At least fiscally.
Right.
Yes.
If you're looking at the meter, does Bernie's far left socialism of, well, I was going to say yesteryear, but it's still current, move a little toward not the center, but does it have the greater appeal as a result of more people moving that direction?
So is Bernie a moderate centrist socialist?
Well, that's I mean, it's not that he would be.
Oh,
it's
man.
That more people are warming to those socialist waters.
Yes, I think that's a point to consider.
Because we've talked about what happened in 2016. What was it with the Republicans and the administration? Well, the campaign, the Trump campaign, it was, you know, we're going to do away with Obamacare. Now, they're still railing against it, but what they realized is when they took control in 2017 that the rank and file didn't want all of Obamacare to be gone. And that was an indication that the rank and file was moving further in that direction.
Well, and it also showed that that rank and file Republicans, even Trump supporters, went from no Obamacare to, oh, this big federal government plan is okay if it benefits us.
Right.
So when you take that, along with the fact that, remember, in the Trump campaign, the swamp was the Republican leadership not being fiscally responsible and agreeing with the Democrats too much. And when Paul Ryan came in and would not renegotiate with the Democrats what Boehner had come to an agreement with, there was an outcry from Trump supporters and Trump, which solidified the term the swamp, and Paul Ryan a part of that swamp, that Republicans were just going crazy spending-wise. Six right. months later, Trump was saying, we need to borrow a heck of a lot more money because the interest rates are really cheap.
Right.
And now you have a Republican Party that could care less about any debt or any fiscal problems that we may see because of our growing deficit and debt. There is no, that to me is more of a concern as to people being much more accepting of somebody like a Bernie Sanders, because if Republicans have moved that far left, how far left have independents moved?
And I think we have to focus on this core issue, Medicare for all. Now, critical thinkers have torn it apart time after time after time. But that's not who we're talking about.
Yeah, because are we going to bring critical thinking into all of this?
No.
Okay, I just
no, right. because tell me what critical thinker looks at the national debt and says, "Huh." I mean, you can't. So
you can't,
we have
no.
to. We just have to talk about the mentality. I don't know the dismissal of it all. What did you and I anecdotally? We got. Caller after caller. Well, if they're bailing out the banks, I need mine. And then we started hearing after, this was after 2016, we've heard people who call themselves Republicans or conservatives saying, you know what? I think we need to take another look at single payer. Bernie's calling it Medicare for all. Is there a group of individuals in the middle that looks at that and says, well, we probably won't get to Medicare for all and doing away with the entire private sector, but what if he gets us more benefits? What if he gets us closer to that? What if a Bernie sweep, which means that the House remains in control of the Democrats and the Senate turns blue,
well, no, you,
means that we head in that direction, man. And we scream for more. Again, not the entire package, just enough to get mine.
Well, let me ask you this then. Does this mean that the Trump campaign understands that if they can't depend on the economy, that they need to get their Easter basket, since we're right around Easter,
mm-hmm.
their Easter basket of goodies
right.
already of what they will be handing out to the American people in order to compete against the Democrats? Just a question. I don't know if that's happening or not, but I think that's since we bring it up as to where the country is headed, or it seems like where the biggest shift is in Republicans and independents, which we don't care about the debt, we don't care about the deficit. Well, the next thing would be then, well, it's time for me to offer some goodies too.
And where would that come from? One of his top advisors, Ivanka. She's been taught. She has more of a liberal heart, if you will, talking about paid time off for parents, paid family leave.
I thought when you said where would that come from, I wasn't thinking Ivanka. I was thinking 50 cent a gallon gas tax increase.
Right. Well, and how do we pay? You're involving critical thinking. How dare you?
Yes, that's what I was thinking. You're like, Ivanka? No, I'm thinking gas taxes.
But she has his ear, and he's floated these ideas. Paid family leave. He's talked about in recent years, not so much as president, but in recent years, about taking another look at single payer.
He talked about Medicare for all.
So
he talked about a Medicare plan that could pay for all.
Right.
In his campaign.
If it catches and the internals show that the attraction to a Bernie or even a Biden, if Biden says, no, I believe Bernie is on the right track and I agree with it, then what do you do to counter that? Do you say we're going to do away with Obamacare as promised, but we're going to look at a single-payer system, at a Medicare-for-all type plan, and can you get away with that and keep your core?
866-90-RED-EYE.
When temperatures start to rise and the corrosive effects of winter on your truck are exposed, preventative maintenance becomes especially important. In addition to pre- and post-trip inspections, store your truck in an environment that prevents rust and corrosion. If you're operating in a warm environment, avoid leaving your truck parked in enclosed lots with poor ventilation, as humid air can generate corrosive moisture. If you operate in a colder environment, Be sure to inspect vulnerable metal components during every pre- and post-trip inspection. Big rigs are big investments. Take care of yours before and after each route in order to avoid dealing with corrosion later on. If you discover any signs of corrosion while washing old residue away, stop into a TA truck service near you to have it looked at by an expert technician.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-824-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric. I'm Gary. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Jay in New Jersey. The Mueller report coming out tomorrow. Jay, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Entertaining and provocative show as always.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if you touched on it or not this evening, but I'm salivating at the prospect of the issuance of DOJ IG Horowitz's upcoming report on the FISA fiasco. I think it, when that report is issued, I think it's going to bust this entire Trump-Russia scam investigation wide open. What do you think?
Well, yeah, from what we know, there's a definite possibility. Eric and I were discussing this, I believe it was yesterday, though, Jay, and we're wondering, because now that Barr is going to do an investigation on his own with his own team for the origins of the Trump investigation, when he gets the IG report, is he going to release that completely, or is he going to take that and meld that as well as and whatever criminal referrals come with that, along with the House Intelligence Committee and Devin Nunes and their criminal referrals, and make that all part of the Department of Justice investigation, which will be one full complete report that ends up possibly with indictments? And I don't know. I don't know if he plans on releasing the IG report when it comes out. He might.
But I'm with Gary on that, Jay. I think that there is a potential that it could be the key piece to it. Now, it depends. You know, I'm wondering if we will ever learn the full report of what the IG finds, but I suspect ultimately we will, whether it's leaked or whether it comes out as a part of an investigation, or whether Horowitz himself is testifying on Capitol Hill after the report comes out. I suspect eventually we will learn what he finds. And if he does find wrongdoing, I think the reason that it has, one of the biggest reasons it has that potential, is because of the role of the Inspector General and Horowitz himself. This was, I think, the greatest play by the administration to hand it over to the Inspector General's office, because it takes it out of the White House. It's not the White House claiming something. It's not anyone in office claiming something that is an elected office that is claiming something. It is the Inspector General, and that office is designed to do one thing, and the Inspector General has access to anything they want inside that department.
Well,
they'll have plenty of evidence, I'm sure.
I believe we will find out the major findings of the IG report, because the Republicans and the president, and I believe so will the attorney general, will want America to know what was in that FISA warrant.
Yes,
we
yes.
need to know whether that was a legit secret warrant. Look, that's, you know, we talk about the whole secret warrant process. That is something that liberals used to be passionate about. They don't care now, as long as it's used against the other side.
Right.
They don't care. But that is something that I think most Americans care about. The ability of the government to get a secret warrant on an American citizen. Are they following the rules and regulations when they do it? And there's a great question as to the fact that they were not.
Right. And that's, I think, yeah, I think that could be one of the key pieces to that entire scenario, that the IG, again, with access to so much there at the Justice Department, it's not even like an oversight committee that has to request it formally. They have, the IG gets to go anywhere he wants to in that department and gather evidence. So we'll see what happens.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. To the last caller, yeah, I think that you've got a great point. Now, when you look at the IG's limit, the IG has a lot more power to get whatever he wants from inside the Department of Justice, because he is the Inspector General of the Department of Justice.
Yep.
And we're talking about emails, things like that. Where he's limited is anybody interviewing anybody who is not an employee of the Department of Justice anymore. He can't subpoena anybody, or he can't get anything from outside of those actual departments. But that's where you have the House Intelligence Committee that is now coming forward with criminal referrals that have had the ability maybe not to get as much information inside the Department of Justice as the Inspector General was, but combined together, they've been able really, and both of them now, the House Intelligence Committee, with the letter that the criminal referrals are coming to the Department of Justice, and remember, those criminal referrals, in most cases, unless there's a complete curveball coming, are all members of the Obama administration. And then you have the Inspector General. If there are criminal referrals coming down, as Mark Meadows says he believes they are when he was interviewed just here in the last couple of days, well, then just the two investigations themselves cover as much as you can from inside the Department of Justice and everything surrounding it, even people subpoenaed from outside of the Department of Justice by the House Intelligence Committee. Then you've got the Inspector General putting together his own team looking for new evidence, along with Lindsey Graham and the House Judiciary Committee now going to look at the Hillary email and the FISA warrant process also themselves. You have more firepower, you might be able to say, than even Mueller did.
Yeah, I think so, because it's on different levels. It is a, I don't know, 3, 4, 5-pronged approach. But it is a greater, if you look at it, it's a greater benefit for those who are looking for the truth. Forget about the political aspects and what may come of it. It is about finding the truth and creating a transparent process.
And that's where, for us, look, we understand that there's political repercussions in all of this. But when it comes down to it, the thing I want more than ever, and if you've listened to the show, you know we've said this for over 2 years. We just want to get to the bottom of it.
Right.
We want to know what happened.
Yep.
Why? I'm a citizen of the United States. And I, you know, as we said earlier, if Trump actually colluded with the Russians to hack the election, I would want to know that.
Mm-hmm.
There was no evidence that he ever did.
No.
As we have stated from day one, where's the evidence? Where's the allegation? You didn't even have, forget about the evidence. You never had any evidence because you never had a specific allegation, so you didn't have any evidence.
Right.
And we always thought that was very, very thin, and that's why we thought there should not have been a special counsel called to begin with on this, but there was. And the conclusion and everything else that has come out of it, the fallout out of it, might benefit Trump and the truth more eventually than if there wasn't a special counsel.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think ultimately, and that's probably the advice that the president was given all along. You know, the tweets about, you know, Mueller should be gone. This whole thing is a witch hunt. And I'm sure the advice was, let it play out. You know, you're innocent. You know, there's nothing there. And you let this thing play out for what it is. You know, that's the one thing that the president, time and time again, how many times has it happened? I go back to the one thing. We have Lester Holt doing a sit-down interview with the president, and he was doing this rapid-fire type questioning of, you know, did Comey tell you you weren't the focus of the investigation? You personally weren't being investigated. How many times did he tell you? What did he told you 3 times? When did he tell you? Was that on the phone? Was that in person? And he went back, and the president was like, yeah, well, he told me 3 times, and he told me once over the phone, a couple of times in person, whatever it was. And then the media almost mocked him. Well, they didn't almost. They essentially mocked him based on the verbiage, their language that they used, trying to make him look like a fool. Well, ultimately, James Comey gets up there himself. Was he personally being investigated? No. By the way, that turned out to be false.
When you look back at it now, and you look back at why they went after Papadopoulos and why they went after Carter Page, because they might never publicly admit it, but their focus was actually trying to go after Trump.
Right.
They just had no evidence that Trump had done nothing, so they couldn't say that they were investigating Trump, but he was always their target.
Well, because nobody's ever said Papadopoulos colluded with the Russians. Manafort was colluding. I mean, that wasn't the charge. That wasn't the basis of the investigation. Right. That wasn't the narrative. It was all about, you know, Trump. But they ultimately set themselves up to be proven wrong. And I've said the president really hasn't flinched. Yeah, it becomes, he has these, you know, Twitter responses and everything else. But does he look like somebody who's guilty?
He has those minor eruptions.
Right.
No, those minor social media eruptions.
Well, we go back to, you know, the memo from Rosenstein, you know, did, all right, you know, we don't need to put the whole Russian investigation thing or this or that in there in terms of the recommendation for firing a Comey. You know, and Trump was like, no, you know, we need it in there. And they didn't. Well, does that sound like a guy who's trying to hide from it?
No.
Trying to keep it quiet? Trying to sweep it under the rug?
And that will be interesting to see if that's a reason that the attorneys of the Justice Department attempt to convince you that it was obstruction of justice because he did say that.
Right.
Well, as we have said, actually as an investigator, once you find out there is no evidence, you look back and you say, well, the person was furious at law enforcement because he knew he was innocent.
Right.
So how could that be? How could you have an attempt for obstruction of justice when he knew he was innocent? After you look at the entire case and when you see it, and so if they try to make that case, that will actually look weak, I think. Let's go to Mike in Clarksburg, West Virginia. We were talking about capitalism versus socialism, and the Democrat candidates talking about it. Mike, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing in the front lines?
Real good. No, we're in Texas. We're in Texas. We're covering the Alamo.
Oh, all right. Hey, you know something? Socialism is the most wonderful thing going until everybody runs out of money.
And then it's great as long as I'm getting mine, right?
The hills, man, because you're talking about anarchy and dissatisfied people, they'll have it. I will guarantee it. If Margaret Thatcher said it, you know it's true.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting. You point something out here, Mike, that remember what was going on when they were trying to cut the pension benefits in France, and the young people were rioting. How dare you cut what we're going to get in the future? It wasn't even something that you're getting, you know, they were getting now. It was going to be their pension long term in the future. And France wanted to adjust that, and they rioted. Well, they rioted because there has been a society for a long, long time that you will provide for all, and how dare you not provide for us like you did everybody else. But now, think of on a much larger scale, if we were to go full on socialism and all these free things started happening, and then all of a sudden we couldn't afford
it. We have a Russian revolution.
I mean, it would be a very different time in our country, because people will, we go back to the election of Donald Trump. You had a lot of liberals realizing that the best way, well, one of the ways they can protect themselves from a tyrannical government is to practice their Second Amendment right. I don't want the government coming at me, so I'm going to look at arming myself and protecting myself. And we said, welcome to the Constitution. You know, it is time and time again, we hear from the left on socialism essentially that, well, the other people didn't do it right. We even remember the caller we had years ago. It was on single payer. And she said, well, no, this is America. We'll do single payer, right?
Yeah, we'll do it right. Everybody else is, you know, you're talking about Canada.
Right.
Canada can't do anything right. We in the United States, we would do it. Canada, we're better socialists than you.
That's right.
And, wow, that's a rallying cry.
Well, but you know, I mean, you guys, look, the rest of the world is still using metric system. Come on, we're far ahead of them. So, you know, I think of that type of mentality where people just, I don't know, they convince themselves that it's going to be different if we do it.
You wonder what will happen. Remember when Trump during the campaign said, well, we should consider just paying pennies on a dollar of the debt and make those offers to people that we owe it to in order to reduce the debt.
Yeah.
And we were like, what are you talking about?
Are you crazy?
but hypothetically, and he, of course, backed off on that because the whole system would collapse if you did that. Nobody's going to lend the United States money if they believe that we're going to pay 20 years or 10 years or 15 years down the road, 5 cents or 50 cents on a dollar.
Right.
The reason they put it in is not because they're going to make a tremendous amount of money, but they know that their principal is safe. If you make the case that their principal isn't safe, they're moving out. But when you get to that point, because we see now, I mean, you got Democrats out there proposing the fact that we've got to drastically increase the amount of payroll tax on Social Security and on Medicare. Right. In order to keep it going, we're going to have to do it because they can't cut back on the benefits. They cannot tell senior citizens 10 years from now. They can't tell senior citizens 20 years from now. I just had to put it when both you and I are both collecting Social Security.
Right.
That we need to cut Social Security benefits 20%.
Yeah.
Because it's just not there. They can't do that. So they have to raise it. Once they start raising taxes, the way that they will have to do, because one thing that we've not talked about, and I'm sure this is something that Trump is thinking about when he's talking about the Fed saying you got to keep the interest rates low, is if interest rates go up to 5 or 6%, if they go back to where they were 15 years ago, we blow a hole in the deficit like you can't believe because interest charges just skyrocket.
Yeah.
Interest charges could take up 20, 30, 40, or 50% of the actual budget is just being paid on interest. At that point, you've got to have a major cut in social programs and in entitlement programs. That's why when he says Medicare for all, when Bernie says it and says, well, you can pay the same that you're making and actually pay less and have as good a health care, he's lying to you. It's impossible. But anybody who understands mathematics knows it is impossible to do so. But it's getting to the point now where not only does America wish to be BS'd, but the bigger the BS, the happier we are. Make it a big promise. Don't sell us something small. Don't sell us something small that's impossible. Sell us something that's absolutely impossible.
Right. Go
and,
big.
And then we'll cheer for you more and support you more for your boldness. That's the kind of idiocy we're dealing with in this country.
No, I think it is. I don't know that it changes much because it's the greatest appeal, right? Look at all you're going to get. Joey Pants, The Matrix, I know I'm not eating steak. Doesn't matter.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to John in Maryland. John, quickly, we wanted to get you on before the top of the hour. Welcome. Hi.
Hi. Just a couple of ideas. The idea of trying to take a benefit away from somebody that's already got it is one thing, but Social Security is snuck in raising the minimum wage. I was born in 56, and I don't get full Social Security until 66 years 4 months.
Yes.
Going back to his history, the expected life expectancy when Social Security went into effect was like 63 years old. Most people, you know, at 65,
right.
most people were
right.
dead by, but if they would start, you know, if they would start telling a 20-year-old and a 25-year-old and a 30-year-old, you're not going to get it at 65, you're not going to get it at 70. Your life expectancy right now is 83 and 87, so you're going to wait till you're 70 or 75. The Medicare, to work out some of that would be to, you now are responsible for more than 20%.
Right.
Right now it's 20%.
Well, you just make the point that we made when they're talking about on the left, Medicare for all. They can't even do Medicare for some.
Right.
Without increasing the deductible. The other point is, you used to have 8-to-1 giving into Social Security. Now it's less than 3-to-1.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. In the news today, breaking news, hell must be freezing over in New York.
I thought hell was in Michigan.
I just happened to be reading the opinion section of the Wall Street Journal, and I didn't know this, but in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo has asked fellow Democrats in Albany to lift the cap on the number of charter schools allowed in New York. The state now caps the total number of charters statewide at 460. But in New York City, where the demand is greatest, 235 charter schools are now teaching 123,000 students. New York Public Schools, 1.14 million students overall. And they say, why the cap on good schools? You ready for this?
Yeah.
Here's why. Here's why Cuomo's doing the right thing. Wow. I can't believe somebody's going to use that against me someday. The most recent state test results for grades 3 through 8 show that while the majority of New York students at traditional public schools are not proficient in either math or English language arts, a majority of charter school students are. For New York City, the charter performance is even more impressive when broken down by race. At city charter schools, 57% of black students and 54% of Hispanic students pass the English language arts, compared with 52% of white students. It's the same in math, where 59% of black students at charter schools and 57% of Hispanics at city charter schools pass against 54% of white students statewide. You know, you had talked about this earlier with the whole Medicare for all, and that the government can do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
And that the fact is, you've got to take the competition out of it. Once you start going down the road of single-payer system, it's the whole point of, you've got to take, we saw it in Canada in the great debate that happened up there, you got to take the private sector out of it.
Yep.
Because all the money has to go into the one system that is run, otherwise that one system might collapse upon itself. when you allow charter schools to flourish, when you add competition. And as they say, the results of charter schools in New York are quite impressive, and it is costing less per student.
Remember, the ratio for Obamacare to be successful was 40%. That 40% number was supposed to be comprised of people, young people, paying in to the system and not taking from the system. They promoted that. They said that's what the ratio, that's the ratio that we have come up with, is we need it. We need 40%, this entire pool of premium payers, 40% of that to be young people, because they pay in, they pay the premiums, and they don't take from it. That's why they moved the age to 26. They wanted the parents to pay the premium for those young people. Well, the equation didn't work. It never works. The private sector always comes in, and there always has to be an adjustment, unless the government says we're going to change the rules. That's exactly what happened with Obamacare. That's what would happen with Medicare for All. Is, well, Bernie doesn't even really hide it. I mean, he's promoting the fact that the private sector would be out of it, be done, because they can't have the threat of competition. They can't have people having choices. And when you look at the charter schools and their performances, you have had many liberals, and by the way, good for Cuomo. I don't know that he's going to win this, but
no.
You have to see the performance here. And there's no way you can look away from that. No way you can come to any other conclusion than it's working.
Remember when during the Obama administration, when Obama tried to kill, the voucher system?
Right.
And what was it? Was it one of the chancellors in the D.C. school districts who quit?
Right.
Who
yes.
said, you finally have to take a stand and say, am I for the children or the unions?
Right.
And the Obama administration, in her opinion, showed that they cared about the unions more than the children.
Right.
As they point out here, that even when permitted to open, the Wall Street Journal here, charters are often held hostage by political leaders, such as Mayor Bill de Blasio, who is backed by the teachers' unions that don't like charters because they're exempt from union work rules. They give an example. The Success Academy's charters, one of the highest performing, notes that though it's willing to open its doors to thousands more children, it can't expand because the city refuses to provide space, even though the city has 212 half-empty school buildings. We wish Mr. Cuomo would push the charter cap increase as part of his budget negotiations when he would have a greater leverage. Mr. Cuomo has successfully intervened on behalf of charter schools, but this time will be more difficult because the last election saw a half dozen pro-charter state senators replaced with charter foes and Democrats on the left. Let's hope he's up for a public fight. Well, he may say it, but he may not be up for the public fight. We remember
right, yeah.
when he first took office and said, look, I'm against the millionaire's tax. Don't you understand that since a significant portion of the budget, so much of the budget is paid for by millionaires, that they can move? And eventually he had to concede, but what did they find out? They've got budget problems there. They've lost a lot of the millionaires there, though. So what do? You continue to raise the taxes on the millionaires, giving them more incentive to move.
Mm-hmm.
But on charter schools, I just happened to see that before I went on, and I went, wow, okay. I just it's Easter week, so I thought I would bring to our audience any potential miracles that were happening.
Well, And it would be a miracle if he were successful in lifting that cap.
And it isn't going to happen.
Not going to happen.
It's not going to happen in New York. It doesn't matter the success that they have. They don't. They really don't.
It's not about the education. You know, they talk about it when they talk about the free college and everything, and a more educated society. They'll tell you is a more productive society, is a more prosperous society, is a better society. But we control the education. Don't make any mistakes there. The Democrats are the ones who, through the indoctrination process that starts at a very young age, all the way through the indoctrination process, post grade school into high school and into college, we need to be controlling that.
In other news, a trio of top Republican senators are doubling down on their demand, this from thehill.com, for the Justice Department to hand over information on the handling of the probe into Hillary Clinton's private email server. Senator Lindsey Graham, Ron Johnson, and Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Finance Committees, respectively, sent a letter Tuesday to Attorney General William Barr, arguing that now that Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe is wrapped up, the department should hand over the requested documents. Now that the special counsel's investigation has concluded, we are unaware of any legitimate basis upon which the department can refuse to answer the Judiciary Committee's inquiries, the senators wrote in the letter to Barr. The letter comes as Republicans are pivoting to investigating Obama-era officials and scandals as they look to put Mueller's probe into election interference and the Trump campaign behind them. So that's from the Hill.com. We knew this was coming because you had Lindsey Graham talking about it. But it's also, you know, it's just not the interference. I mean, it's not just going and looking into the investigation. By the way, Inspector General Horowitz is also looking into the Hillary email thing.
Mm. Yeah.
And did.
Right.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because the results in, you know, the politics that came out in it. Look, since the same people, or one in particular, Peter Strzok, was involved in both, and we know the politics of how politics played a role in how federal law enforcement investigated Donald Trump. Well, since those same people were involved in investigating Hillary Clinton, if one's looked at, both have to be looked at in 2016. Everything has to be looked at of what happened involving the 2016 election, whether it's Hillary or whether it's Trump.
Yep.
And what happened? How did we get to the point that we got to? And it looks like William Barr putting together his team. The Inspector General's report is coming out here in the next month or two. You have the House Intelligence Committee under the Republicans that will be submitting criminal referrals to the Justice Department. And those criminal referrals are members of law enforcement, maybe intelligence and Department of Justice employees in the Obama administration, and also the Senate Judiciary Committee is also looking at it.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere, that's for sure. It's not going away. The question is, I guess, what will the IG report show? I think that has the some of the greatest potential, only because of what is available to the Inspector General. Not being able to go back and interview, you know, someone like a Peter Strzok or anyone else that is no longer there, certainly may limit that. But there will be plenty of data available to him that could potentially add up to really bad news for those that are or were at the Justice Department under the Obama administration. I don't know when we're going to see that, but we're told it will be sometime in May or June, according to the AG.
866-90-RUD-EYE.
As if last weekend's tornadic outbreak in parts of the South didn't send a signal, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey clarifies.
Between April and June is the height of the spring severe weather season across the United States, and that is the time period when we see a lot of our damaging tornadoes and severe weather.
An early fatal March tornado in Alabama was the most significant of a relatively quiet tornado season to date up to last week's outbreak, and what potentially could be more activity this week.
We face the likelihood of a three-day outbreak coming Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
As for why the tornado season got off to a relatively late start,
the cold hung on a little bit longer than typical this year, and that did to some degree suppress some of the severe weather activity in March and early April. But now that we have seen things start to light up and we continue to see an active progression of storms, unfortunately, I think we are now into the heart of the severe weather season.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Some economic news that came out yesterday from the Federal Reserve was that American manufacturing was flat in March. The weak performance has contributed to fears about a slowing U.S. economy as fuel from the late 2017 tax cuts faded. And as the auto industry continued to struggle, it also dragged overall industrial production down slightly in the month. Manufacturing fell 1.1% in the first 3 months of the year compared to the same period of 2018, the Fed reported. However, some slightly good news, output in March was still 1% higher than a year earlier. We'll see whether that lasts. But for the first 3 months, down 1.1%. Production of motor parts and vehicles plunged 2.5% in the month and collapsed 12.8% in the first quarter, according to the data, meaning it is 4.5% below the March 2018 output level. Wood products also fell more than 2% compared to February, while only computer and electronic products and primary metals had gains of over 1% in that quarter. You also were telling me before and giving me some information when we were discussing this earlier, Eric, that the shipping levels of the trucking industry down last fall and also into the first quarter.
Yeah, trucking accounts for about 70% of U.S. shipment tonnage total, and you're seeing these volumes drop. In fact, there was a survey done by ACT Research that reached out and showed that there were about 60 fleets that crossed into negative territory in November for the first time since July of 2016. When it happened in 2015 and 2016, you had a factory slowdown based on the fluctuation of the U.S. dollar. Right now, there are a number of things going on, including the cost of raw materials, that being the tariffs. So that is something that is affecting not just the manufacturing, but it's affecting the movement of the goods. It's affecting the purchasing of the goods. That's where it all begins, the demand. So we'll see what happens with the deal with China. We'll see what happens with aluminum and steel tariffs if they remain. Is the president going to follow through on his promise or threat, I guess, that we're not going to lift the tariffs just yet. We're going to make sure that China is playing by the rule, any rules that are put into place once they have an agreement. How long does that remain in place? How long do the tariffs remain?
Well, you know, and we had talked about earlier the problem politically with the president saying that others must play by the rules when it is the president that Mexico and Canada is accusing the president of not following the rules. The president promised to drop both the steel and aluminum tariffs once they had a deal, and now both Mexico and Canada are extremely concerned that the president came out just last week and talked about that if the border problems aren't settled, he's going to put automobile tariffs before he closes the border a year from now. Well, he's made a new free trade agreement with Mexico and with Canada. To do so would violate those two. The problem is right now, the president doesn't have credibility even when he signs on to a deal, when he puts his name on paper and says, I will agree to this. What they're stating is then he backtracks on the promises and makes threats that makes it so supply chains become undependable. We can't rely on the United States to fulfill its trade agreement. So you can't make that accusation against other countries when there's suspicion that you won't follow through on the agreements that you have made.
You have to reestablish the trade routes. You have to reestablish the trust with the trade partners and with the voters being the producers.
And this is solely, by the way, nobody else is involved in this. The president is the one that can make the problem worse or solve this problem entirely.
Right. Trucking tonnage is still in positive territory overall, and you can avoid any further decline, how fast will they act on it? Here's your forecast.
There is the potential for some severe weather today in the southern plains, and this could be really a pounding event for Oklahoma and portions of central and southern Texas right through the middle of the state. In the summertime, you get a lot of the thunderstorms that punch up into real high layers of the atmosphere and produce explosive thunderclouds. But with this type of system, what we're looking at is cold air from the north wrapping around out of Canada and spilling into warm, moist air coming in from the Gulf. With that setup, you get the clash of air masses and a lot of instability creating the severe weather. We saw the same thing this past weekend in the Deep South. Warm air from the south wrapping around in with the colder air from the north, and the result were some damaging tornadoes. In fact, 8 people lost their lives this past weekend in tornadoes that went through the Deep South. We'll be watching this one, part of your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios. They're right 100% of the time. Just ask them. Red Eye Radio.
Order.
Order.
Just so everybody knows, because we mentioned it to start out the show, We had a very nice listener.
Sandra,
who sent us gavels. If you were listening last week, we were in a gavel fit because Gerald Nadler has his gavel. And so we were talking about the fact that we should have gavels. Now, you heard Eric hit his before here.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. Now, we're only going to use them. We use them twice today, but only once a month, because we did realize that using a gavel on the radio could be quite irritating quite fast.
Yeah.
Quite quickly.
I actually don't care. Get used to it.
But we're gaveled up.
Yeah, we're all gaveled up.
You know, with the Mueller report coming out tomorrow, you and I have always said one thing, that the biggest question that we ever had, even though, you know, as we say, we're talk show hosts, we give our opinion, but we want to give our opinion based on what the facts are. And one thing that we always noticed, and this would be the journalist in us, is the fact that there was never an allegation of fact. In this whole thing, it was a generalized allegation. And they were sourced allegations. And nobody would stand by their credibility, which, of course, the journalist in us made us completely suspicious and made us ask questions. And the questions that we asked over 2 years ago, all the questions were the right questions to ask, and led us to what we know are the facts on the table today. I just want to read a couple of sentences here, not even paragraphs, from Holman Jenkins of the Wall Street Journal that made the same thing from the editorial staff. He said, let's go back to the beginning. Journalists were not wrong in being open to Christopher Steele and his handlers, but they were wrong not to notice that the one incontestable fact Mr. Steele had put before them had nothing to do with Mr. Trump and Russia. That one fact was that a paid advocate, talking about Christopher Steele, a paid advocate who was trading on his previous profession as a British intelligence agent in the middle of a presidential election, was being shepherded around Washington by a notorious PR public relations schemer and promoting allegations whose truth he was unwilling to vouch for and whose source he was unwilling to reveal. Unless you are an exceptionally dim journalist, whenever somebody peddles a salacious story to you, a question naturally leaps to mind. Is the real story the one that I'm being peddled, or is the real story the fact that I'm being peddled it? to a reporter, and this gets down to the major thing, this gets down to the base of this story initially on that you and I were all over. To a reporter, one documented fact is more valuable than any number of unsupported claims. Indeed, a bunch of unsupported and unsourced allegations smacks of an attempt to gull him into the "where's there smoke, there must be fire" fallacy, which it would for us too, which it did for us.
Yes.
We went, well, wait a minute. Where's the fact? We're being peddled all these unsupported and unsourced allegations. Our question was, at that point, the natural inquisitive nature of journalist, somebody trying to manipulate me.
Yep. Because that is, otherwise it is what? It is activism.
Well, yes, and he says, I describe here, of course, David Corn of Mother Jones in the initial instance, but also the hole that much of the mainstream press has dug for itself as a result of its hardly inexplicable distaste for Mr. Trump. By now, self-respecting reporters should have written off sources like Representative Adam Schiff, who seriously misled them. As we said, he lied. It was obvious. Yeah. And that's, they never questioned the fact that how come he keeps getting caught in lies? How come he keeps saying something and they never end up being true? As an investigator, that's what you look at. As a journalist, that's what you look at. And the fact that when the media said, well, all we did was follow what happened. But, well, no, that's not. You just don't report what happens. You are the one that has to decide that whether is being told to you is credible or not.
Yeah.
You just don't peddle it. And as I said, they should have noticed, as you and I both did. And again, we're not the geniuses in this country. We're the two idiots overnight. Remember that. Mm-hmm. They should have noticed that the Trump Tower and George Papadopoulos episodes they cling to actually demonstrate the opposite of a conspiracy between Mr. Trump and the Kremlin. You and I have said, well, nothing happened there. It showed they didn't want it. They didn't care. They moved to, there's nothing there.
Right.
They should have realized that it was neither necessary nor useful for Vladimir Putin to coordinate with Mr. Trump if they wanted to promote a Trump presidency. They should have noticed that none of his indictments and plea deals with Trump associates for lying and other offenses included any attempt to establish collusion related to crimes. Related to collusion-related crimes. Mm-hmm. The alert press might now be even asking if the collusion investigation circus was ever necessary or justified in the first place. The desperation with which so many news organizations misread the evidence the world kept putting in front of them, first off, is a testament to the enduring applicability of the emperor's new clothes. Secondly, it represents a relentless reiteration of the original mistake, asking, what if the allegations, the Steele allegations, are true, but not, what if they are false and have been knowingly and recklessly promoted to us? And that's what you do as a journalist. Somebody doesn't come up to you and say something, oh, here's what I hear is happening. Okay, I'm just going to report it. You don't do that. We don't do that. No. We would never do that.
No, in order to go down that reckless path, you have to be willing, not caring about what is going to be the result at the other end, of the other side. You know, I asked the question several times, right? Don't they get tired of getting burned? No, they don't. They're an activist.
And that's what we said. The reason, and that's what I would, you know, the Holman Jenkins, and it's a great piece because it does break it down.
Right.
That you have to ask two questions. Okay, what if the allegations of Trump are true? All right, we need to investigate that. Mm-hmm. What if they're not true? Because what I'm being peddled is unsourced, and there are no facts attached to it. I can't connect any dots here. So I'm not going to go forth and say this is true because, as far as I know, this is somebody who is lying to me because they presented me no credibility. They presented me no reason to believe them.
But gone is the integrity or reputation that used to be important in terms of maintaining it in journalism. It's gone.
I forgot who had said it. Somebody had an op-ed piece saying that we hope that the journalists will now look at their mistakes and realize what they did. And as you just pointed out, And we pointed out, no, they won't.
They don't care.
They're not journalists.
They don't care. It's not about journalism.
They're not journalists.
It's about activism.
They're not going to, they've been activists. They're political activists is what they are. They're not journalists. So they're not going, since they've never been journalists, they're not going to change from being political activists to journalists. So there is no hope that that's going to happen. That's why they could dismiss it and simply say, well, we just reported what we were told, as if they had no business to ever question what they were told to
right.
find out whether it was truthful or not, that all of a sudden they just became a conduit.
Yeah, was it Chris Cuomo that said it? Or was it Tapper at CNN that said, look, our job really isn't, it's very simple. Let's, you know, just trying to, you know,
right.
dismiss the whole thing. Our job is very simple. We just repeat, we just tell you what other people tell us.
That's not
no.
the job of a journalist.
No, it is not. It is to get out there and ask the questions
right.
and find the answers to those questions that most people could never get answered. But if you're an activist, it doesn't matter. The truth doesn't matter.
Well, when you're an activist, that's what you say. Well, we simply told we simply reported what we were told. Well, no, you don't.
No.
Because you
no.
get millions of tips every day that you don't report those stories.
Right.
What you did was you were on a certain narrative that you hoped it was true, and therefore you didn't fact check. You didn't question.
And you didn't
just went
care
along
to.
With it because you're an activist. You're not a journalist.
You don't care to find the truth. The truth
right.
isn't the point.
Never was.
It's your truth. It's your narrative, which is far from the actual truth far too often. And it's not going to change. It's not going to change. It won't change if Donald Trump loses the election next year. It won't change if he wins
it. No.
It won't change regardless of what anybody at Fox News might do, what a Kimberly Strassel or a, you know, any of them might do in finding the truth, because what they do, what journalists, the handful of journalists that are still left, what they do is very different. It's a very different job. They take it very seriously. I tend to believe that if a Kimberly Strassel or Molly Hemingway or John Solomon or Sarah A. Carter or any of them found something that was damaging to Trump, but found that it was true and believed that it was true and had evidence behind it, they'd have no problem reporting it. None. They know the criticism that would come their way, but they still wouldn't have a problem doing it. And why? Because they're going to most often show their work. Now, what has also suffered is the fact that you used to be able to trust sources. Either now they're either making, far too often, making up sources, or their sources are burning them, or the sources are part of it. And they're coordinating it all together to build this false narrative. The facts don't matter. When the truth doesn't matter, then what do you have? You have a narrative. You have a false narrative built on something that was false. It was carried on for the better part of 2 years in terms of Mueller's work, and more than 2 years in terms of the activity of those at the Justice Department and the media.
This came up in a couple of blogs, and it's worth just throwing out there that you had the media and other government officials say that they believe they know who in the Russian government fed, Christopher Steele the information.
Mm-hmm.
What if he just lied?
What if Steele lied?
What if Steele just lied?
Right. Yeah.
What if he just made it all up?
Right.
That came up in a blog. What if he made it all up? What if it, you know, because there's speculation of who did it, but nobody in the Kremlin has ever, admitted.
A, they're not going to take credit. You're never going to prove it. You're never going
right.
to have to prove it.
But what if the attorney general comes to find out that Steele just made it up himself? I mean, that
right.
would even be worse.
Right. That it wasn't, because the Russians trying to manipulate something, nothing new. They, you know, the old Soviet Union practically invented propaganda, right? Well, when it comes to This would be, and, you know, I always scoffed at the paycheck, $160,000. That's what they paid Christopher Steele.
Yeah, you and I always asked about that. We want
that doesn't
more.
Doesn't seem like a big paycheck. So is he sitting there in a hotel room, you know, near the Kremlin, just writing things down? Not even near the Kremlin, in London, just writing things down, making it up as he goes along. We'll probably never know.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold weather can be tough on diesel engines, causing fuel to gel and clog up filters. Stay prepared this winter with the proper fuel additives for your truck. Adding a cold weather additive to your maintenance routine is the easiest way to prevent fuel gelling. Diesel fuel is full of paraffin wax, an element designed to improve your fuel's viscosity and lubrication properties. The lower the temperature outside, the faster the paraffin wax in your fuel will gel up. This can lead to clogged fuel filters or fuel that is too solid to flow. Shop shelves are full of different fuel additives, but the one you need to keep an eye out for is a cold weather additive to help fight fuel gelling this winter. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Uh-oh.
What?
Skater Bob O'Rourke declines to sign a pledge barring fossil fuel campaign money.
Yes.
Really?
Well, he is from Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Can you really consider yourself a Texan and refuse fossil fuel money?
No, I guess not.
Yeah. There's only so far you can go. Now, in New York, you could do that, but, I mean, really in Texas. I mean, that's...
Yeah. You got to take oil money.
Somebody has to make the oil.
Still use the oil.
You know what? Extract the oil.
Yeah. Still have to use the oil. Still have to buy the oil. We don't have to like it. We can rail against it once we're elected. Thank you for the donation.
We'll drive the car, but we'll hate every moment
of
it. I'll be a millionaire, but I'll hate every moment of it.
Cringing in my limousine.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.